The implementation of the school desegregation plan for Jefferson County is apparently going fairly smoothly. More than 130,000 students are scheduled to return to school this morning, with 22,600 scheduled to be bused to assigned schools for desegregation purposes.
The scene where out of the Outer Loop intersects Preston Highway is getting pretty ugly, and it's been ugly for about 2 hours, according to people who are out here.
The two reports you just heard were broadcast on Wave Radio on consecutive days. The first on September 4th, the day school began in Jefferson County. The second on September 5th, when thousands of people rioted on Jefferson County streets because of court-ordered busing. The Jefferson County school desegregation story is one of the biggest events ever covered by Wave News. In terms of overall staff commitment, no other story is close, not even the 1974 tornado. During the first part of the year, we followed the complicated legal battles over whether school desegregation was even necessary. Then, in mid-July, when the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals abruptly told Jefferson County school officials there must be desegregation by September, the pace of Wave's coverage was stepped up. By the time school actually began, our reporters were working round the clock. On this tape, we hope to give you an idea of our efforts. As soon as it became apparent that busing would be needed to carry out the Federal Appeals Court order for school desegregation, anti-busing rallies became a common occurrence all over the county. But on the night of July 18th, a new element was added to one of those rallies. For the first time, the Ku Klux Klan came to town, and it was reported by Tyler Cox on his late-night, 30-minute Newswatch 970 broadcast.
The rhetoric was heated, and the message was simple and direct at tonight's anti-busing rally in Louisville. The rally was highlighted by Ku Klux Klan speakers, one of whom was Dr. James Warner, the Grand Dragon of the California Klan.
It's time in this country when the white man stands up for his convictions and votes the way his people want him to vote.
All of the parties in the local desegregation case agreed to let U.S. District Court Judge James Gordon be the architect of the plan that would be used to desegregate schools. Judge Gordon had presided over the school desegregation arguments since the early 1970s, and once he decided to devise the desegregation plan himself in order to save time, he moved quickly. On July 22nd, he released some, but not all, of the details of his plan. And Livingston Gilbert told Wave listeners about it.
Federal Judge James Gordon has released the basic outline of the desegregation plan he has devised for local schools. The 18-point desegregation plan includes points taken from previous proposals by the two school boards, the most important of which is the adaptation of the home school proposal.
8 days later, Judge Gordon revealed the remaining details of his school desegregation plan. And Brian Rublin was one of the Wave News staffers who took to the air minutes after Judge Gordon's news conference.
This is a Wave News special broadcast on the Jefferson County School Desegregation Plan. I'm Brian Rublin. Judge James Gordon has spent much of this day behind closed doors going over final details of the school desegregation plan that will be implemented when school begins September 4th. Judge Gordon has now signed that plan into law, and in the next few minutes we'll present the specifics of the plan to you as best we can.
Included in Wave's 40-minute special program detailing the Gordon desegregation plan was Roger O'Neill's explanation of the information many listeners were most anxious about, the formula for determining which students would be bused and which students would be exempt.
As difficult as it may sound at first, the methodology or the way in which students will be selected to be bused or to participate in a transportation plan for desegregation purposes is really relatively simple.
On the night before school began, with nearly 10,000 people attending a noisy anti-busing rally at Louisville's Freedom Hall, Wave changed its regular programming schedule to present a special news department phone-in show.
Because of community interest and concern over the start of school, we're going to present a special Wave News open line program tonight, a program that will give you the opportunity to ask questions of some of the people most directly involved in the planning and implementation of this historic 1975-76 school year in Jefferson County. You'll be able to talk with various school officials, including Superintendent Ernest Grayson. Sam Neal, the director of the Metropolitan Social Services Department, will be here, as will a representative of the Louisville Police Department and an attorney with the criminal section of the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department.
Besides answering questions, school superintendent Ernest Grayson issued an appeal to the community.
If I could say one thing to the community, I would urge you to send your pupils, your students, to school tomorrow. We are prepared. We are ready for them. The more students that we receive in school tomorrow, the better organized, the sooner we can get on with the job of education. And certainly young people depend on the schools for their education. We can do what we must if we have your help. Every day of school is important to these children, and I hope that the people in this community will accept this responsibility. I hope you will accept this challenge. We will not let them down as public school administrators. We hope you won't let them down. We need your prayers and your support for the opening of school tomorrow.
When school began the next morning, WAVE News reporters were deployed all over the county, at schools where trouble was expected, at schools where everything was likely to go smoothly, at designated detention centers, and at police staging areas. At first, it looked like everything would go well.
The implementation of the school desegregation plan for Jefferson County is apparently going fairly smoothly. More than 130,000 students are scheduled to return to school this morning, with 22,600 scheduled to be bused to assigned schools for desegregation purposes. The buses began picking students up in their home neighborhood shortly after 6 this morning. There have been a few mix-ups of bus schedules, some going by pickup points before students were expecting them, some finding more students at the bus stops than the buses could carry. These problems occur at the start of every school year. It's not certain how much of the problem is being caused because of the desegregation plan.
A communications center had been set up at school board headquarters, and it was from that center that reporters met with school officials, law enforcement officials, the mayor, and the county judge. All pertinent information about what was happening throughout the county was funneled into the communications center. And using the broadcast line we'd installed to the center, Bob Kay gave reports to WAVE listeners every 30 minutes during the first day of school.
I'd like to reiterate that the county police did report earlier this morning a power out at the Auburndale school for a while, but that's back on now. There was one broken window at that school, and there was some paint on the walls, apparently both these incidents occurring during the night. There are not any crowds at the school. It's quiet there. We did also report earlier the bus to J-Town and Carithers, Fisherman's Pike pickup. The bus did not show. At 34th and Garland to Central, the bus did not stop. And bus number 625 to Manuel, Burnett and Parkway Drive, was due to arrive at 625. It was not there at 715. And then, of course, from the Rumor Control Center, we had the report of gunfire at Duval Junior High. Police checked that out. There was no gunfire. Rather, a rock was thrown at the building and no report of any arrests.
In addition, WAVE broadcast 2 news conferences from the Communications Center during the first day of school. And we also heard regular reports from news people who spent the day at the many different locations in the county.
It's very quiet this morning at Fairdale High School, Fairdale Junior and Senior High School. It's very quiet because there are very few students here this morning and even fewer demonstrators.
Almost all the school buses have now left Shawnee. County School Board member Mrs. Carolyn Hutto is here, and she says that Shawnee is considered the most logistically difficult in terms of bringing 33 buses and nearly 1,800 kids in through the same two-lane gate and then getting them back out again. The protest area here at Shawnee remains empty. Many parents are standing around as their students prepare to leave for their first day of school.
300 students were supposed to be bused from Valley to Shawnee under the desegregation plan. However, less than 70 of those students have shown up here at Valley this morning. We've seen some buses arrive here with just two or three students on them. Most, however, have been at least half full. But only one of the 16 buses coming into Valley had a full load of students.
Brian, a police processing center and a mini courthouse are in readiness in this former grade school building, but so far there has been no need for either of them. 115 folding chairs have been set up in the improvised basement courtroom. It's to the courtroom that any violators of the federal desegregation order will be brought after being booked and processed just a few feet down the hall.
Out here so far it's a standby situation, an air of anticipation, but so far no action. Uniformed officers, marked cars, unmarked cars, emergency medical units, all standing by if needed.
Because of a threatened large-scale jam-up of Jefferson County roads by one group of anti-bussers, reporter Barry Burnson spent part of his day reporting from a helicopter.
Everything is quiet at Central High. Many buses out front, as we've said before, each bus with a number on its roof. I also see many kids walking to school. They seem to be mostly black. Who presumably would live in the area. A number on top of each bus, a number on top of each school.
The threatened traffic jams never materialized. In addition to regular reports from news staffers in the field, we talked on that first day of school with a lot of people who were keeping their children home, like this mother who lived near Valley High School and told us in the early morning hours why she was not going to let her children be bused.
I just don't feel like you should have to be bused at Shawnee when we live right here and he could fall out of bed into Valley High. And I just don't want him to go down there. I'm not prejudiced. I just don't want him to go down there. I just don't feel like it's right. I moved out here into a nicer neighborhood. The other people can do it, too.
Some of the people involved in that first day of school busing didn't think it was all that bad. Melissa Forsyth rode to school with a group of elementary students, many of whom had never been on a school bus before.
Most of their mothers came with them to the home school, Brandeis Elementary in the heart of the West End. They were there to wave them off when the buses finally arrived. The kids got there much too early for the buses, and the big question was, where's my bus? When can I go to school? Once on the bus, they were just as excited. They were asking questions like, are all my teachers going to be black? I wonder what the new school's going to look like. Absolutely no apprehension. The kids were very much looking forward to it. They seemed to very much enjoy the first bus ride they ever had.
Later on that first day of school, a downtown anti-busing demonstration turned into a confrontation with police. Several people were arrested when the crowd tried to break through police lines. And Cameron Harper, reporting from a phone booth on the River City Mall, gave WAVE listeners a running eyewitness account of the confrontation. Later, the location of the downtown trouble shifted, and so did Harper.
The situation is this. Policemen have cleared the intersection here, and traffic is beginning to flow again at 5th Street and Broadway. There are protesters all over this general area, from 2nd Street on up to 6th Street. As policemen moved in the area to break up the crowd, there were several confrontations, but none of them major confrontations, none of them like the confrontation up at the end of the River City Mall or the one down at 6th and Broadway. There have been about 7 or 8 arrests that we know of, according to Chief Niven.
Louisville Police Chief John Niven told WAVE reporters that his officers were trying hard not to arrest downtown demonstrators.
We had a confrontation when they attempted to move down the River City Mall, which is off-limits to all demonstrations. We've had another one over here at 6th and Broadway, and currently, as you can see, the crowd's moving north on 5th Street. We don't want to lock any more people up than we have to, and so long as they give us the opportunity not to lock them up, we will avoid doing so.
During one of the Communication Center news conferences broadcast by WAVE, Mayor Sloan talked about the downtown trouble.
It was a confrontation between the police and the demonstrators at Liberty and the River City Mall. Our policy has been to not allow demonstrators to go down the River City Mall. It's an enclosed area. The security of pedestrians in the mall is at stake. The security of the demonstrators who would be going down the mall is at stake, and we have not allowed it, and we didn't allow it this time. And there was a confrontation between the police and the demonstrators, and there were demonstrators arrested.
For most of the second day of school, Friday, September 5th, everything went well. WAVE reporters were again deployed throughout the county, just as they had been the previous day. Then, late in the afternoon, protesters gathered at Valley High School in the southwestern part of the county. Black students leaving school were taunted, and rocks were thrown at their buses. After dark, more people came to Valley High School, until finally a crowd estimated at 10,000 had gathered. Before the night was over, Jefferson County Police Chief Russ McDaniel would say his people were dealing with full-fledged rioting, and McDaniel would tell Roger O'Neill that police had lost control of the crowd.
At a time tonight, Roger, I would definitely say that we were not in control. When we got reinforcements here, I feel like that we have the situation in hand, but it can redevelop at any time. So at present, we have enough men here on scene, but we cannot commit this kind of manpower down here each night.
You recommend to the judge, if this kind of a situation continues, that he seek some extra help?
I'm prepared to talk to the judge. I'll be talking to him tonight, and we're going to have to do something about the situation that exists down here.
The Friday night rioting was not limited to the Valley High School area. There was also trouble, serious trouble, near Southern High School.
The scene where out at the Outer Loop intersects Preston Highway is getting pretty ugly, and it's been ugly for about 2 hours, according to people who are out here. There are already about 50 state police troopers equipped with riot gear, and a whole squadron is just now arriving. I counted about 20 cars. There is debris burning in the middle of Preston Highway, about a half mile from Southern High School. One gas station has been demolished by demonstrators. They have ripped up the gas tanks. There are reports that the buses are on fire. We have not been able to get close to the high school yet, but that is the word out here, that the buses are on fire. There has been a lot of trouble out here for the past couple of hours. People are standing on one side of the street yelling at the police, shouting, laughing, and clapping. The police are on the other side. Some of them headed down to Southern High School about 10 minutes ago, and more police have just arrived. A fleet of them in cars is now going apparently to back up the policemen who were heading for Southern High School on foot.
From another location in the county, WAVE's Dean Norland filed this report.
Larry Sales and I are on National Turnpike just across from the South Park Elementary School. A little ways down the road is the South Park Drive-In, and next to the South Park Drive-In is what we have been told was at one time a frame house. It is now on fire. There are people out demonstrating. They're young people. They are apparently drinking what appears to be beer. We drove by the burning frame house. Some youths asked us if we wanted to get closer. We said that we did. As we were driving by, we noticed a business across the street. Some people came up to us and said that there was shooting going on. And we indeed heard something that sounded very much like shooting.
Throughout the nighttime hours of September 5th and the morning hours of September 6th, WAVE reporters kept listeners posted from around the county, and Tyler Cox tied their reports together from the studio.
Between 45 and 50 people have been arrested this evening, and it is our understanding that a city police paddy wagon is on its way to the Dixie Highway area to bring those people arrested back downtown for processing this evening. As far as property damage in the area, we don't know that as yet. It is being checked out. Police cars received quite a bit of vandalism this evening, though. Right now, between 175 and 200 police officers remain on the scene. That includes about 50 state policemen equipped with riot gear. They did use tear gas this evening, and Chief McDaniel says that county police and state police will keep a vigil in that area all night and all weekend if necessary. And he complimented the men on the way they were able to effectively disperse the crowd as quickly as possible.
A short time later, the magnitude of the rioting was brought home when Police Chief McDaniel told Cameron Harper,
"We took a terrible beating tonight. We have 20, 25 police officers that was injured. We had a crowd to turn on an 11-year-old kid that was seriously injured. They threw a brick through a window and hit a three-year-old baby in the head. We have roaming mobs down here right now, hoodlum-type acts where they get behind a building and throw bricks and rocks and things of this nature."
During the early morning hours, WAVE News talked with Governor Julian Carroll from the Executive Mansion in Frankfort.
"I am just as strongly opposed to forced busing as most of the advocates against forced busing in that community. But additionally, let me make it absolutely clear that I fully intend and am determined to maintain the peace and the security of that community, and we'll use whatever force is necessary to see that the law and order in that community is maintained. That force is available and will be supplied upon request from Mayor Sloan and from Judge Hollenbach."
For his part, County Judge Todd Hollenbach was meeting with reporters at the Communications Center.
"The law enforcement officials, the county troopers, have bent over backwards, turning the other cheek, realizing the emotional impact of what has happened to our community. But when a time comes that the public safety is so threatened that an innocent child, a three-year-old, is severely injured, when county police officers are injured, we've lost the time to stand by and turn the other cheek. And to those people who are in the area, those people who will not turn away, we're utilizing tear gas, we're going to take this thing under control because our commitment is to the public safety."
An indication of how police dealt with the rioters came in this report, filed by Dave Nackdemon from Valley High School, after police had gained control of the protesters.
"Well, right now, Dixie, Iowa, in front of Valley High School is clear.
is quite noisy. Cars going through the intersection here honking their horn. There are still isolated incidents. A car just got hit with a brick, apparently. Police have rushed over to the other side of the street. But basically, it is a stable situation, but still unresolved. Police estimate that they have arrested about 55 people here tonight. Approximately 75% of them young adults, 18 years old and up. There are about 15 of them laying face down here in the grass in front of me waiting for the wagon, which will take them apparently over to the Haywood Center for processing.
By daybreak Saturday morning, the rioting had ended, and National Guard troops had been called to Jefferson County. They would remain for almost 2 weeks as a precautionary measure. The intensity of anti-busing sentiment in Jefferson County did not diminish in the days and weeks after school opened. Many parents kept their children home as part of an anti-busing school boycott. And on the night of September 30th, Tyler Cox told his listeners about a different kind of boycott.
School officials have been meeting throughout the evening to discuss what to do if a large number of bus drivers do not report to work tomorrow morning. We have Roger O'Neill live on the line with us at this time at the County School Board. Roger, what is the latest development?
Tyler, schools in Jefferson County will be open tomorrow. They will be open despite the fact that there are at least 50 bus drivers who will not be driving buses. That's been confirmed already. Meetings have been going on all night with high-level administrators at the County Board of Education. The decision has just been made within the last 10 minutes to let the school stay open, despite the fact that a number of drivers will not drive because of intimidation against them in apparent reaction to this boycott that is planned for tomorrow.
On October 9th, Cox reported a new angle to the local anti-busing story: the cancellation of a presidential trip to Louisville because of the possibility of anti-busing violence.
Earlier today, we learned that President Ford would not be appearing in Louisville next week on behalf of Republican gubernatorial candidate Robert Gable. At the time, there was no official confirmation from the White House. But during a news conference tonight, President Ford did confirm he was canceling his trip to Louisville next week, and he was asked why.
There has been some turmoil in Louisville as a result of court-ordered forced busing to achieve racial balance in the public schools. And I think all of you know that I have consistently and vigorously opposed court-ordered forced busing to achieve racial balance. I think there's a better answer to quality education. And this problem in Louisville at the present time has created some local disturbances, and rather than involve any potential injury to anybody else and for other security reasons, I have decided to cancel.
By late October, the focus of the local anti-busing movement had shifted, for the time being at least, from Jefferson County to Washington. There, the Senate Judiciary Committee conducted 2 days of hearings on a possible constitutional ban on court-ordered school busing. Tyler Cox flew to Washington to cover the hearings, and Brian Rublin reported on the night of October 28th.
Jefferson Countyans had more than a passing interest in what happened today in Washington because this was the first of 2 days of Senate Judiciary Committee hearings into possible constitutional amendments to ban court-ordered school busing as a means of desegregating schools. The hearings are an almost completely Kentucky affair, with by far most of the people giving testimony from the Commonwealth. Some of the voices now from this first day of hearings. Louisville Congressman Romano Mazzoli.
Mr. Chairman, while Louisville is no city of angels, we do care about our city, we care about our schools, we care about our children, and we try to do the right thing. But while my fellow townspeople and I feel that desegregated schools are the right thing, they do not, and I do not believe that desegregation, that busing as a tool to desegregate, is the right thing.
Kentucky's junior senator, Wendell Ford.
The wise use of public funds and the best way to ensure continued community support for our public school system is to increase the educational attainment of our children rather than wastefully spending money on transportation.
William Eichelberger of the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights.
The Kentucky Commission on Human Rights is opposed to any amendments to the U.S. Constitution which would limit and restrict the rights of black and white students to an equal education as provided under the Constitution and the supplementary court decision since 1954.
University of Chicago sociologist Dr. James Coleman, the man credited with devising the concept of school busing to integrate, now a man who's done an about-face regarding his belief that such busing is a useful tool.
In hindsight, 10 or 20 years hence, these policies designed to desegregate schools may well be seen as highly segregative policies instead, because while their direct and immediate effect is to reduce school segregation, their indirect and longer-term effect is to increase both school and residential segregation.
Finally, Governor Julian Carroll, who made an anti-busing statement to the committee, then underwent some tough questioning from Republican Strom Thurmond of South Carolina, and afterward told reporters that he thought his Republican opponent, Robert Gabel, had supplied Thurmond with some of his questions.
I expected almost anything out of some of the Republican senators, but I was hopeful that this hearing today would be utilized primarily for the purpose of addressing the burdensome responsibility that we have in Lowell and Jefferson County to bus our students. And I was hopeful that the impetus of the hearings, hopeful that all the questions of the hearings would try to address those problems rather than trying to address political considerations.
For 2 days, Tyler Cox gave WAVE listeners regular reports on the progress of the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings. And when he returned to Louisville, Cox produced this special program.
Most of the testimony at these hearings will be directed at the experience of the public schools in Jefferson County, Kentucky, which includes the city of Louisville.
Retrospective, a look back at 2 days of hearings on busing by the Senate Judiciary Committee. Here is WAVE newsman Tyler Cox.
After 14 hours of testimony from 40 witnesses, the Senate Judiciary Committee this week closed 2 days of hearings on the busing situation in Louisville and Jefferson County. As Committee Chairman James Eastland said, these hearings were to deal mostly with our situation. Other cities will be heard from in the coming weeks.
Since the first week of September, there have been continuing anti-busing protests in Jefferson County. The biggest, perhaps, took place on November 3rd, Election Eve, and was reported by Brian Rublin and Roger O'Neill.
NewsWatch 970, time coming up on 10:30 on WAVE in Louisville. Let's go now to Roger O'Neill for a live report from the Preston Highway area on what the situation is at this minute. Roger?
Brian, from Preston Highway in the outer loop all the way to the Southern High School campus, all of Preston Highway appears to be and certainly smells and feels like a solid wall of tear gas.
The Jefferson County school desegregation and busing story is not over. Besides anti-busing demonstrations, there are continuing legal developments. County Judge Todd Hollenbach has been given permission to intervene in the local school case and try to come up with a plan that would be a suitable alternative to busing. Governor Carroll has filed a lawsuit seeking to force the federal government to foot the bill for local school desegregation. And Judge James Gordon, the person who came up with the busing plan, has refused a federal government request that Carroll's suit be dismissed. In addition, the judge has scheduled hearings for next summer on whether the school desegregation plan should be revised in any way prior to the start of the 76-77 school year. So one way or another, there aren't going to be very many days in 1976 when the local school desegregation story is not in the news. And whatever turns the story may take, WAVE News will report them completely, as we did in 1975.